Spirit Radio Podcasts. The best of the morning show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
During the very first lockdown, even though there was less cars on the road, there was more accidents and fatalities. So how can we make sure the roads stay a safer place, especially when there's more pedestrians and buggies and cyclists? And on top of that, we have the situation where we have changing weather conditions. It goes from being really rainy to then icy. And how do you manage that? Well, earlier on in the week, I was joined by Conor Faulkner of AA Roadwatch, and he just gave advice for staying safe on the roads. And he started off talking about icy conditions.
It's ice that really is the biggest hazard. And it just means you can't trust your braking. So that, loads of motorists will have had the experience of giving themselves an awful fright as they approached a bend in a road and thought everything was in control, and suddenly the car slips a bit. And hopefully, if the driver's going slowly, it does no more than give them a fright and enable them to get the car back in control. But where it really goes wrong is where people go too fast. And I have to say, it's a pet hate of mine, and I'm sure lots of people, you know, out and about for a walk on a beautiful day, and there are drivers pottering around doing what they need to do, and then there's somebody and he's just going too fast, and you're looking at him and you're going, too fast, too fast, too fast. And it's behaviour like that that does lead to the accidents. I mean, really, the most important thing that a driver has to remember on a morning like this is to slow down.
And do you think people have modified their behaviour enough, Conor, especially bearing in mind, you know, where someone might live, their road might be quite quiet usually, but now because, there's a lot more people walking and stuff, that those few cars coming down are all the more noticeable. We have a phrase to our kids when we're trying to keep them safe on the roads, and we wear our high vis and everything, and they're only small, and we say, fast cars don't see little kids, because people do whiz past you and you do feel like shaking your fist at them.
You do, and you think, what is that behaviour about? It's rude behaviour, which is rude in normal circumstances, but it's dangerous, particularly on an icy morning. But generally speaking, I have to say, Irish drivers, Irish people tend to be very good. We're better than we give ourselves credit for. We actually have got a good road safety record internationally, and one that's improved a lot in recent years. But it's interesting that during lockdown last year, when traffic was significantly reduced, we actually had more crashes and we actually had more deaths.
And why do you think that was, Conor?
Well, road safety people are studying it at the moment, but it seems to be, I think, exactly what you were saying. You know, that there are fewer cars around. So for the individual car, it feels like the situation is safe. It feels like these are quiet roads, and the temptation is to allow the speed to drift up. And if you allow it to drift up only a little bit, then that person who was just going a bit too fast as they approach the corner, you know, that's the circumstance where you could hit the child, or where you could lose the car and wind up in a ditch, particularly on those secondary roads on an icy morning. But the bad habit, if you drill down to it, the one that's making the accident most likely, the single most important thing is the driver going just a bit too fast. Now, there are other problems in road safety, like drink driving, for example, but I mean, that's not really relevant in this context. I mean, it does happen. And the other thing that you have to look out for, and Lord bless us, this stupidity still goes on, but drivers using their mobile phones. So again, something you could witness every day when you're out and about, a driver who should be taking care in a pedestrian-rich environment, and they're looking at their phone, they're distracted, and really careless behaviour. And no driver thinks they are allowed to do it. And yet, if we're honest, virtually every driver makes that mistake at least once. And at those distracted moments, particularly if you're going a bit too fast, that's where accidents come from.
Yes, it's interesting you should say that, because even when we're crossing at pedestrian lights, I'm always looking to see, is the driver looking down? Have they noticed the light has gone red? Yeah. What about with the ice on the road, Conor? If you feel your car going into a skid, how are you meant to react?
Well, in old days, I mean, I go back far enough to remember giving AA advice on this over 20 years ago, and back in the day, in that technology, there was a specific skill around pumping the brake pedal with your foot, like a rally driver skill. You'd never explain that to somebody on the radio, and thankfully it's kind of gone now, because all cars have ABS, virtually all cars have ABS, and that means that the car itself does some clever stuff when you jump on the brake pedal. The car itself will release the front wheels, re-engage, and stop the wheels from locking with their anti-lock brakes. So all the driver has to do is jump on the brake pedal and keep your foot there. Now, much more importantly, though, is to slow down so you don't get into that situation. It's far easier advice to follow. So, rather than explain to people what the rally driver does when the front of the car starts to slide, it's much better advice to say, particularly on roads like this, don't get into that situation. Use your right foot to lift it off the accelerator and just move more slowly.
And what about drivers as well that just aren't confident? We're very grateful at the moment, Conor, to have my mum is minding our kids, but when it's really icy, my dad has driven her over to our house because he's just a bit more confident in those conditions. If you don't feel confident, it's probably better just to not drive.
Yeah, just don't drive. Just stay at home. And, you know, there are a lot of drivers out there. One of the reasons why our road safety record is good is you think about the ordinary population or even elderly people, very often they're a model of self-regulation. I've had loads of conversations with older ladies in particular who say just that. I'm not confident driving on ice, so I won't do it. I say, good for you. That's exactly the right choice. The overconfident driver is much more dangerous to themselves and to everybody around them. But in the same way that you would advise, you know, anybody, it's not just on the roads. In my area here, we have some sort of very, very nice little pedestrian walkways, so I can go up to the shop just up through the laneways. They're icy this morning. You'd be very careful about if you've any sort of mobility issue or if you're elderly or you use a stick or something like that. I'd say stay put on a morning like this. Conditions are icy. And it's not something that happens all the time in Ireland, so we're not adjusted to it. And it can catch us by surprise, but it's just, you have to respect it. Outside my window this morning, it looks like a beautiful, beautiful winter's morning. You'd love to go out for a walk, but it is icy out there, so take care.
Well, finally, just to ask you, Conor, just from the driver's perspective and just something we've touched on already in terms of just more pedestrians and cyclists and things like that that are out and about, what's the advice there? Slow down is obviously the big message. What else should we be thinking of?
Well, we are seeing, not just in COVID, but we are seeing more and more people on bikes and e-bikes. So the commute into Dublin City, if we ever get back to doing it, is going to look and feel a little different. And from the driver's point of view, that means you're in an environment with vulnerable road users, lots of bikes, lots of pedestrians. You've got to be conscious of that. So you must respect things like red lights and stop signs, and you have to respect the rules of the road.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
Recently on The Morning Show, I was joined by cancer care nurse Christina Callahan, who shared with us her experience of working as a cancer care nurse and on the front line during a pandemic.
Well, I'm working currently in Sligo University Hospital in oncology. So, understandably, it has had a total impact on the hospital and even just the way we were working. I mean, obviously, we were trying to keep services running as efficiently and as much as possible, but we obviously have to put patient safety up at the very top of that. So depending on the risk depends on how much services are able to run at any given time, but obviously essential services are totally prioritised. So we're seeing firsthand everything is so much more intricate. We have to make sure the person doesn't have any chance of having COVID before they come in, or that they've not been in contact. And then you have the distress of, if that is the case, trying to reassure them, you know, and that. And then obviously when they come in, then you're having to work through a patient plan that's good and efficient and doesn't have them here for any longer than they need to be. So and obviously for ourselves, then we're going home to our own families and hoping that we haven't been in contact with it to bring it home as well. And then I've also worked for Mayo Roscommon Hospice during this pandemic as well, because I just moved to Sligo there in October. So I've seen it also from the other side, from community side, from people at home sick, and that dilemma of whether they should come into a hospital because of COVID-19. And I've seen firsthand the fear of what that might mean and how scary that was, and that decision making for our families, especially when someone is really sick and you want to do the best for them, but you know if you send them in, you're possibly not going to be able to spend time with them in there. So,
and that's the thing, probably that's so hard, Christina, is a lot of these patients, they can't have visitors. And not only that, I would imagine for you, just caring for them, you mightn't be able to be as tactile as you might have been pre this pandemic.
totally. That has been a huge thing for me, actually. I have found that really difficult because oftentimes there's things that words can't help with and can't change. And oftentimes there is things you cannot change. They're out of our control entirely. And sometimes just for someone to know that somebody is there or to feel their presence without having to use words. Sometimes we can be clumsy enough at words and say things that really possibly don't help because we're not in the situation. But sometimes just holding someone's hand or reaching out and giving them a hug, you know, can just sometimes say, well, I'm there, even if I don't really understand it, you know. So I have found that very difficult. But unfortunately, we've had to curtail all of that because of keeping everybody safe.
Maybe you could share some anonymous stories with us, Christina, just of some of the people that you've been caring for.
Yeah, well, I mean, people who come to mind, particularly earlier on in the pandemic when it was all very, you know, we didn't really, it was all new to us, to everybody. I suppose at the moment things are an awful lot more, we kind of know exactly, you know, what we're doing and we're a bit more able to work around it. But in the earlier days, I looked after an elderly couple. Both of them were very sick and they just had each other. They didn't have any other family members. Their family lived in the UK. So they just were relying on neighbours for support who couldn't be coming in because of this sudden lockdown. So all they were meeting were people from the health profession. And obviously things were changing there about how much we could be in there and how long in the house and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then unfortunately, this gentleman's wife passed away and they'd been married for just under 60 years. And obviously I was still calling to this gentleman even after his wife had passed. And just the entire grief process for him was so awful because not only had he lost her, but she'd been admitted to hospital. He was too frail to go in. It wasn't safe for him to be in there, even if he was allowed, which of course he wouldn't have been until right up until a point when it looked like it was going to be needed on compassionate grounds. And then he didn't get to spend that time with her. And they'd been together, united, for
such a long time.
Their life. Yeah. And suddenly in that last few weeks of life, they were separated, and just the pain and the grief he was going through and his loss of faith in all of that as well. He really struggled as a man who had believed to find God in that situation because he was so, you know, angry and upset about the way it had all happened and played out. And then he was on his own then. So then life was suddenly even more, for him, you know, isolated and, in his own words, not worth living, not worth being there because everything he loved had been taken from him. And now even the usual comforts we would have took for granted prior to COVID-19 were not there. So, you know, his family stick out in my mind. And another gentleman and his wife, and he was a young man and he was passing away at home, and his children lived in the United States, so they weren't obviously able to come. So most of the interactions I had with him were with his family on Zoom calls. So it was a totally new way of nursing, having, you know, to speak to family that were on a Zoom call in the room and trying to explain and help them understand what was happening via technology rather than via personability. And you can't beat personability and knowing that somebody is there doing the very best for your dad, and then you're relying on a phone call that's breaking up every few minutes and you're cutting you off and maybe time delays. And, you know, it takes the whole personal experience out of it. And that same gentleman at the time when he was coming close to passing away, he couldn't have the last rites because the priest couldn't come to the house because of lockdown. So I had to telephone the priest and put him on speaker, and the priest had to give the last rites over the phone with him and his wife and myself there in the room. So, you know, they're just little examples, I guess, of how huge changes are. But even outside of that, Wendy, can I just say, it's not even just affecting people with COVID-19. I think the thing that's been forgotten is the fact that it's affecting everyone. Like, it's not just, I mean, obviously it's terrifying if you're diagnosed with COVID-19, and particularly if you're vulnerable or sick. I mean, there is, you know, there's no taking from that. But you don't even have to be sick with COVID-19. You just have to be vulnerable, and then suddenly your world is turned upside down, and the fear that comes with that. And it's particularly a time where I think in all of that we look for solace somewhere. And
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
Earlier on in the week, I chatted to Susan Adams, who's an environmental educator, and she explained to me exactly the impact that microplastics is having. Specifically, she talked about a recent study which showed that infants who are being bottle fed might be ingesting microplastics because of the sterilisation process. But the first thing that Susan chatted to me about was just explaining what exactly microplastics are.
So microplastics are basically a form of plastic, and what it actually means is it's bigger they derive from bigger bits of plastic that are broken down. So it's any small piece of plastic that's 5 millimetre in length or smaller. So they basically come from anything that begins to break down. So like it could start as your plastic bag or your bottle of bleach or anything, basically. But where you're coming from, I know you were talking about a study that you were looking at in terms of babies' bottles has been a bit in the news lately about microplastics. And there is a research done in Trinity about an alarming study that revealed that babies were ingesting microplastics through the breakdown of the polyethylene bottles that babies use. And needless to say, this is very alarming information. And what that basically means is, and how we can tie it to make microplastics is, so any plastic, so you think of your food container, your baby's bottles, there's all different types of plastic, right? There's 7 different types of plastic.
Yeah, because sometimes, Susan, we see these like this free and free of this and free of that, and you're not really sure what it means.
It is a minefield. It is an absolute minefield. It's a fully subject plastic because it's, I love it in one sense because it's something that we all use every day, but that it's such a tangible product, which means that now that we're getting all this information about how bad it is for the environment, it's something that we can all take action on and reduce in our lives. So I love it. It's a wonderful product in one way. I love it in one way. And then in another way, obviously, it's really bad for the environment. But any type of plastic, basically the issue with plastic is that it doesn't break down, it doesn't biodegrade, and it doesn't go away ever. And just to put that in a bit of context for you, so plastic was first invented in 1907, which, if my maths is correct, is 114 years ago. And 79% of all plastic ever made, giving our population is up at 7.8 billion people, 79% of that plastic is still here on Earth.
Wow, because it hasn't biodegraded. And when you think about that, and then when you think about the fact that it's from an evolutionary perspective that it's around since 1907, and when you consider microplastics and that we might be ingesting them, what sort of impact that might that have on our bodies? Or do we know anything about that, Susan?
Yeah, exactly. So just because it's been here so long, it's obviously completely embedded in the environment. So to throw another bit into context, so within the oceans, there's 5 gyres, literally plastic islands of plastic, because we've been dumping all this plastic into the ocean for many, many years, decades. And this big plastic has basically cut down into microplastics. And one of those plastic islands is the size of France. It's so big. So big island full of microplastics the size of France floating around in the Pacific Ocean. So it's within our system, our food, our water, in the food chain, in terms of the micro and the macro feeders in the ocean, and then, of course, humans. If we're eating fish, we're ingesting it then within our food chain. Unfortunately, it's in our water, and it's kind of like an invisible enemy, microplastic, because we can't actually see it with the naked eye. But there's been all these scientific tests on water, on soil, on baby bottles, and we're really beginning to understand the impact that is starting to have on us as humans. So it's in terms of the study with the baby's bottles, which is obviously quite alarming, within that study they found out that the polyethylene bottles that are most commonly used for baby's bottles, when the bottles are being sterilized within that process, you know, they're heated up, the plastic begins to leach and break down, and in essence then that leaching and those tiny bit of microplastics were then being ingested when the baby was drinking its milk from its bottle.
And obviously at a time when their gut is developing and their little tummies and everything, is there an alternative to these bottles, Susan?
In the study, there's been a couple of studies. There was a study obviously in Trinity, there was a study in Melbourne as well. Like they're kind of saying they don't know yet the impacts of the ingestion of microplastics across the board from babies all the way up to obviously us as adults because it's in our own food chain. But what they're saying is, you know, you could go back to, when I was little, my mum would use glass bottle or do cold sterilisation, you know, with Milton or something instead. But they're just saying, don't panic yet. We're still kind of gathering information and data. But for me, you know, the plastic crisis, it's massive. And we all need to kind of, we know now we have information, we have data about humans ingesting plastic. So we really need to look at the root to that cause.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
There's been ongoing discussion about what is going to happen with Leaving Cert 2021. Will it be a situation like for last year's students where it will be through calculated grades? Will there be more continuous assessment or will a traditional Leaving Cert be sat? Earlier on in the week, Steve Johnson spoke to Guidance Counsellor Betty McLaughlin to get her thoughts on this and also to just give advice for Leaving Cert students who might be feeling anxious at this time.
The level of anxiety that the uncertainty brings for the students, you know, and I mean, it's uncertain times for everyone and it has been difficult for the department to work on a plan. But I'm delighted for students that there definitely does seem, you know, there will be an easing of mind and some clarity around what's happening very soon, because I know there are intense talks going on looking at alternative options and looking at what best can they do to support these students who really have been through a dreadful time. They missed school last year, they missed again this year, then they thought they were coming back and they didn't get back. Again, there were mitigating factors against that and nobody could help it, but it hasn't helped their anxiety. So I would say just hold firm, keep studying away there, keep at it as best you possibly can, and the resilience that you have shown and learned through this is going to stand to you for the rest of your life. And also keep in mind to doing a bit of research, which I know is an extra challenge, about looking at what career path you're hoping next year. The deadline for the CAO to register, that is coming up on the 1st of February. So really, you know, they have a lot of things on their mind, but there is support out there for them. And please do contact your school, contact your guidance counsellor for a virtual appointment with them. At the moment, they're available in all schools to support Leaving Cert students.
That's a good point. Betty, I have a Leaving Cert student in my household at the moment, and it is hard for her. And one of the things is that not all students want the same. Some of them would be quite happy just to go for this continual assessment, but others say, no, we could really do with the exam. And my daughter, she's aiming high, so she wouldn't have confidence that the predicted grades would work for her, you know. So she is hoping for exams, but it is tough, isn't it,
to
stay motivated and also to know what to concentrate on, because it could be, well, maybe, you know, my assignments, my kind of weekly assignments are more important, because, you know, there could be some sort of predictive grades. Or maybe my mocks are going to be judged, or go towards predictive grades. And so, actually having a strategy is... There's no clear, correct strategy for these students as to how to work. Now, I always encourage my kids, look, you know, you're learning things for life, you know, so concentrate on what you're learning, you know, rather than, you know, being kind of getting very sort of numerical in, okay, well, how many, you know, what will I concentrate on that'll maximise my points? Because, you know, there is life after the Leaving Cert, and hopefully what they learn during this year will stand with them for life, not just for points or whatever. But it's not easy.
It is not easy, and you are so right. They do require that clarity. They're young, and I suppose they can't really decide Steve, on what option they would prefer until they see what options are actually on the table. What are the alternatives? And will there be a choice like there was for this year's students? There was only 4,000 opted for it, but will there be a choice, if you like, for them to, to sit the exam if they're not happy with, if it did go to predicted grades again? But really, it's anybody's guess at this stage. I have no idea what they come up with, but I do believe they have the students' best interests at heart. They also have student representation, and they are listening to the student voice on the committee and the advisory board that are deciding what's to be done. So there is all that happening in the background, and everybody is beavering to give them the best options that they can, and they just have to trust and believe it, and I know it's difficult.
Yeah, well I absolutely accept that everyone is just doing their best, you know, and have the students' best interests at heart, and I'm glad to hear, you know, that there's such a kind of wide representation, you know, on these processes. Now, the thing of the expectation was, you know, the hope was that schools would open next week, and now it looks like they could stay closed till March. This is a big challenge for teachers and school administration, isn't it?
It is a huge challenge. The only thing that my colleagues would say, that this time round they are more up for it. They have learned those skills to teach online, the Google platform. They have they can more easily identify the students at home now who are likely to not have the IT that they need and link in with them because they're going on. They have the experience of last year. So it was easier to spring into action this year on the online Google platforms and the teaching platforms, you know. So that was something that they are saying they definitely, I mean, we have learned things through the pandemic that we won't unlearn. And that was one good thing out of it, you know.
But well, that's a good point,
see a map and clarity for them, only then can we plan. And only then can the students really to plan. Will there be mocks? I mean, you mentioned the mocks. We don't even know if the mocks are going to be able to be facilitated online until we see what the plan for the reopening is. So it's just all so up in the air. But I would say to them, just like you said, keep learning, to keep on top of it. Don't put things off waiting for a decision. Just work away as consistently as you can. Keep your day as normal as you would for the school day. Get up, have your shower. Keep that routine going. And keep connected with your friends and do contact your schools and your teachers. They have email addresses and everything to contact their teachers if they're there to contact your teachers if and when they need to, you know.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
Earlier this week, Spirit Radio celebrated an incredible milestone. We were 10 years on the air. And we were reflecting on this by talking to lots of different people. Now, one of those people was instrumental in helping coming up with how we as a station would fulfil our mission of being an all-Ireland Christian radio station. And thank God we've managed to achieve that, to have all Christian denominations working together on the air and off the air. So Carol reflected a little bit about how we got the broadcasting licence in the first place and what happened next.
So I can't remember what year it was that the BAI tendered a licence for an AM signal for Christian radio. If I remember correctly, we won the license in 2007, but there was quite a long process of preparing for that. And we were up against a couple of other, organizations that wanted the license. And so we had to present ourselves in the best way possible. And there was a lot of work in that. And then we had the hearing and found out we won the license. And it was quite exciting, you know, a very exciting time. And it was a time when, it was not difficult to gather the pledges required to get this thing off the ground. I think we had something like 3 million euros pledged to get Spirit Radio off the ground. And then just after we won the license, Celtic Tiger crashed. And all this money that had been pledged just evaporated overnight. And so it took us a few years to regroup. I mean, I think it took us a while to realize that, you know, we weren't going to be able to move forward on the basis that we thought we were and needed to regroup. So it was actually several years pulling it all together. We won the license in 2007. We did not go on the air till January of 2011. Yeah, lots of suffering in between. So thanks be to God. I remember during one part of those, you know, kind of in between years when, I mean, there were many, many times when we didn't know if it was going to happen or not. You know, our hopes were regularly, it was quite a roller coaster, let's put it that way. And I remember one time we were praying together and I got this word from Isaiah 43 verse 21, the people I have formed for myself will broadcast my praises. And I took a lot of courage from that the Lord intended this thing to be established. And so it's a project that I'm very proud to have been involved in.
Getting close to the first full day of broadcasting, which was on the 27th of January 2011. What was it like in the days or weeks in the run up to that?
Well, we had gotten some studio space at Hume House in Balls Bridge. It was the old
FM 104.
Yeah, exactly. And so we had a real studio. I think that was really important to our mentality kind of leading up to it, that this is serious. You know, we've got a real broadcasting space. This is a real thing. And I remember, you know, just all the, you know, anxiety sort of as we were progressing towards the launch date. But on December 31st of 2010, the last day of 2010, I was driving somewhere and I turned the radio on and we were test broadcasting. And I think they had I think it was called Take Me to the Water. It was just a really bright, bouncy song. And and I was like, oh my gosh, this is real. We're actually doing this. And it was just gave me goosebumps, you know, and I think I was crying in the car. You know, it had been such a long journey to get it to that point. And so for the next, I don't know, 4 weeks, I guess we were, you know, finishing up our hiring. Another little side story. I had accidentally walked into a glass door at a grocery store and broke my nose, and I had two black eyes. And I'm trying to interview people for this new radio station with my two black eyes, and I'm sure they thought I was probably, you know, living with a mean husband or something. I don't know. But anyways, so there were all kinds of little things like that going on. We were working with Garvin Rigby at the time, such a talented program director. He was setting up, you know, kind of, I think we had 4 or 5 days where we were running several days of as if we were on the air. We weren't on the air, but we were running days as if we were. So we were doing the morning shows, we were doing the news, we were doing the weather, we were, you know, ironing out kinks. And then the day came, and we all, I think it was noon that day, the 27th of January, we all crowded into the control room there at Spirit Radio. And I think there were probably a dozen of us in there, or maybe more, all the board members and all of the new you know, presenters. We had Ronan Johnson, and we had Dave Redmond and Dave Baker, and Chloe Jackson was involved, and a number of others. Funny story. I had been broadcasting the news for several days. I shouldn't say broadcasting it, but practicing broadcasting it. And I had never read a Gaelic score. I did not know how to read the scores for Gaelic football. And all of a sudden, there we are. We're on live radio, and I'm looking at this thing about the Gaelic football scores, and I'm like, I have no idea how to read this. I had no concept of the relationship between goals and points and how that all works. And so I just read it like it looked, and pretty soon the phone rang, and it was the priest from Dunleary. I can't remember his name right now, but he called and explained to me how we read Gaelic scores. And I always thought that I brought added entertainment value to Spirit Radio just because I was such an idiot.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio.
There was a report in the Irish Independent recently about families who are trying screen-free days, and all of them seem to have positive experiences. It's probably something we'll all admit, especially during this time, our screen time has increased hugely. Earlier on in the week, Steve Johnson chatted to Alex Cooney of CyberSafe Ireland, and she gave her thoughts on just the current screen time situation, how screens can be good, how to limit their use, and the impacts they can have if we overdo it.
I think over the last year, we've all seen an increasing dependence on our screens as a result of lockdowns. You know, the reality is our devices have met a greater number of our needs. You know, we've had to rely on them for work, for learning, and also for socialising and entertainment. So, you know, I think we have to acknowledge the huge benefits that they provide to our everyday lives. But I think we also have to recognise that sometimes we need to reset the balance or find a healthy balance where we maybe are becoming a bit over-dependent.
Well, I'll give you an example from me yesterday, and I was just thinking about this because, first of all, the great use of it. My daughter is doing piano lessons remotely, using technology. So that's great. But she actually asked me on this occasion, she had to record her playing two pieces and sending it to a teacher. So it was different to a normal lesson. And she, for some reason, she couldn't use her phone. So she asked me for my phone. So I set it up, started recording her playing. And then she said, "Can you move away? You're distracting me." So I had to sort of stay in the general living space, but not too close to her, and effectively just wait. And I suddenly found I wouldn't have thought that I'm very dependent on my phone, but I was looking around for things to do, and I kept looking for my phone. Of course, I couldn't use my phone because she was using it, and I sort of felt, gosh, I'm more dependent on this than I thought, because it really is the go-to, isn't it? The habit is just
absolutely.
if I've nothing to do, just, you know, look at my phone.
It meets so many of our needs. It's so true. So we actually ran a day last year. So on the 16th of October, we did this 24-hour cyber break. So the idea was you switch off your device from 5 o'clock on the Friday, and it runs through till 5 o'clock on the Saturday. So we had decided we were going to do this, and it's actually going to be an annual event. We're going to hold an annual cyber break every year in October. Yeah, and it's the idea. And so we had on our website, we had loads of ideas about what families could do instead. So it was aimed at families. And it was, you know, we felt like it was a really good time to do it, especially after several months of living under kind of COVID restrictions and probably seeing an increased reliance on our devices. But as we got closer to doing it, and obviously I was just thinking, gosh, I obviously need to do this myself. And I did do it. And I was leading up to it. I mean, honestly, I was literally sending emails and posting tweets right up until that 5 o'clock mark.
5 o'clock, yeah.
And I was almost sweating with the kind of, oh my gosh, you know, I've got to do all these things before I'm not allowed to do it anymore. You know, and it was a sort of panic stations and this feeling of, and then switching off. My kids were literally also waiting for 5 o'clock because they were very excited that, you know, I was going to be putting it down. So I switched it off. There was a bit of a taking it away from me. And right now you focus on us for the next 24 hours. And we had talked about what we were going to do for that time. And, you know, we were going to do, you know, pizza night, and we were going to do a walk. And so we'd set up ideas of what we were going to do in ahead of time. But I had all this anxiety myself, you know, and I'm so aware of it. But actually, I have to say, it was a really lovely 24 hours. I actually didn't put on my phone again until about 25 or 26 hours, you know, later. So I kind of went past the deadline of 5 o'clock on the Saturday, and I held off because it had been really peaceful, and I was determined to do it exactly right and not break it or kind of, you know, fudge the rules or
that's
whatever.
Brilliant. But can I ask you one thing about it though? Is were you allowed to take pictures?
No.
You know, of what you're doing, you weren't. Yeah.
So not
with your phone. Yeah. So you see, I think that's one of the things is that the phone does everything for us now. You know, it's not it's not just for emails or whatever. It's also our camera, and for so many of us, it's also our watch and our alarm clock.
It could be a map as well.
Map,
I think Google Maps, with somebody who hasn't got a great sense of direction, you know, you do find yourself really relying on the information that you get from your device. So it is a challenge, but it is doable. And I think we have to remind ourselves of that. You know, and it's not about saying, oh, we must, you know, completely step away. Devices don't have a role to play in our lives. That's absolutely not the case. I think we need to recognize they do play an important role in our lives. And you know, we wouldn't have got through, you know, all these restrictions without our devices oftentimes, but it is important to take that break and to recognize, you know, the need for the healthy balance.
I think it's the thing of, it's great to use this, but let's check that I can still live without it. A bit like a little reality check.
How dependent am I? And also thinking about what are you reaching for the phone for? You know, like, is it to check directions to something, which is a really useful thing? Or is it to kind of call granny in Australia or, you know, whatever? You know, those are really positive ways, I think, of using technology. Or is it just to scroll through Instagram, which I'm guilty of too? Is this sort of mindless kind of scrolling, you know? And interestingly, my kids are doing their maths homework and homeschooling, and, you know, sometimes I find myself reaching for the phone to check the answer, and then they're sort of looking at me going, what, can you not do it in your head? You know, we have to do it. We have to do mental maths. Why aren't you? And it does make you realize the skills that you lose when you just, you know, have this over-reliance on technology.
When you have something helping you, you become over-reliant on it. Now, there's a more serious side to this as well, and that's particularly for children in terms of brain development. And like at CyberSafe Ireland, you've kind of looked at that. You know, what are the impacts on a child's brain of too much screen time?
Well, it's interesting because this conversation has evolved over the years, and there used to be very sort of strict guidance on it. So from bodies like the American Association of Pediatrics in the US, which is kind of the go-to body for screen time advice, you know, they used to have quite clear guidelines depending on the age. Now, the under twos, I think it is still fairly consistent that, you know, best to avoid screens where possible for the under twos. I think that remains the kind of standard advice. Interestingly, what's changed is less of a focus of how much time you're spending online and more of a focus of what are you doing? Rather than how much time, it's a kind of qualitative discussion of what you're doing online, how you're spending the time. Because there's a huge difference, right, in having that conversation with granny that I mentioned earlier, you know, on WhatsApp or whatever, you know, to keeping up your social connections and using technology for that. Or using it to follow a dance routine learn a recipe or you know, to do, you know, play educational games. Hmm. Those are all kind of beneficial activities. Whereas, you know, there are other activities that, you know, we find ourselves doing online which are a bit more passive, a bit more sedentary, and you do need to limit those.
The Best of the Morning Show with Wendy Grace on Spirit Radio. Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.